too want to bring greetings to each one this morning. It's been good to be here. I hope I can remember some of the things that Brother Steve shared, and I hope I can forget some of the other things he shared. I am not fond of snakes, and recently we took our grandchildren to the zoo, and one of them wanted to go back and see that python. Ah, it's not good. Anyhow, I'd like to speak this morning of a subject that is dear to my heart, has been for many years, and that is on the school. It was recommended by the school board that we have a sermon on the school beginning of September when school starts, and so it's kind of by that recommendation that we're doing it. School is an important part of our family. I met my wife when she was a school teacher, and I've told our boys that school teachers make good wives, and so some of them have found school teachers for wives. I mean, our boys did. And our girls did too, actually, some of them, one of them. But anyhow, I just did a tally of our the number of years that our family has taught, number of in-laws and so on, and it's a little over 50 school years. So it's been a big part of our family, and it continues to be. I asked one of our children what he would best like his parents. The parents to know of in relation to the school. What's one thing you would want your parents to know about school? And John said the thing I would want them to know is how much I love their children. He said school is not a 9-to-5 job. I think about it all the time. I think about how to help this person with math. I think about how to help this person on the playground, emotional needs. I think about all these things all the time. And he said, when I make a mistake, I want them to know that I'm trying. I want them to give me a little bit more slack. In other words, give me some tolerance. Let them know, because I really do love their children. And that is a very common statement that we hear from teachers that have been teaching a long time. The students are their life. They love them, and they're interested in much more than just the grade that they keep in the grade book. This past summer, I was privileged to be a part of our 50th. We had a 50-year reunion for our school that started in Geauga County there in 1964, I guess. 1965. It was 50 years last year. Anyhow, they sent out the invitations, and we were... We made plans to go. I made plans to go right away. And there were people there. It was important for a lot of people. It was, interestingly, not so important for some of the people that lived right there. Because not everybody that lived right there was important, was there. But there were people that came there from Belize. There were people that came there from Africa, came home for this reunion. And there were people there that came from a long ways. And it was very important, as it was for me. And when we went to that meeting the first day, it was started in the evening, then all day, it was Friday evening, all day Saturday. But when we got to the old church house Friday, it was just like electric in that, in the old ante room and so on. There was just this buzz of talking, of energy, that you could just feel everybody's excitement of seeing people that they hadn't seen for many years. And it was really, really exciting. Out of 57 people, there were more than 20 there that right at that first night, and then more came the next day. And so some of these people I hadn't seen for years and years and years. Didn't recognize them. Didn't recognize some of them. They would have to say who they were. We didn't have name tags, so we had to go around and find out who it was. And so, yeah, that was really, really exciting. And some of the students, I was in fourth grade the first year it opened, and so there were students there from there until till more recently. But, you know, different people's perspective. There were many people that had made, there were some people that had made some really sad choices, and they were there. His perspective, one of my friends there from years ago, he said, we all turned out pretty good, he said. None of us are incarcerated, and, you know, I don't think that any of the students were, actually. I thought, you know, interesting. I hope our standards are a little bit higher than that to count as success. But, you know, we're going to go back to that point and say, what constitutes success for a school? We're going to have to answer that question sometime in our life. Is it high test scores? Do we compare ourselves among ourselves, and when our scores are the highest, that's success? Is it when we choose exactly the same things that our parents did? Is that success? What is success? How do we count it? And those are some things that we'd like to look at this morning. At our reunion, we had one of the original board members there, and he spoke of the vision for the school, and he enumerated some of the others that were there. And it just brought back a lot of memories there of how the school started. And there's quite a bit of difference in starting a school to maintaining a school. There's a different kind of energy. And we're not starting, we are maintaining. And so it's a little bit different kind of energy that goes from there. But I remember the men coming to school and having devotions, and without fail they would all tell us that we are a very privileged people. We are very privileged students because of being able to go to a Christian school. And I had gone to public school 2 years in my life, and so I understood a little bit, but I didn't understand the fullness of it. And students at that age become used to something very, very quickly. And to me, this was just what we did. It was okay. I couldn't understand the high cost of what it actually cost these men to put this together and bring it. But it's a tremendous privilege. And sometimes just hearing it again and again doesn't sink in until you really realize what it was. But I remember one person in particular. He said, these are some of the best years of your life. And you will look back and look at these as the best years of your life. And I was living in them then, and I thought, nah, not hardly. And I would look at students nowadays and I would say, look at school. These are some of the best years of your life. Make the best of them. And they just don't realize it. I didn't realize it, but it is true. And so I'm going to tell you, students, this morning, these are some of the best years of your life. I remember when I was teaching after we were married, that I would go home from school and I would tell Marcia, we're going to look back at these years as some of the best years of our life. And we did. We enjoyed the experiences there, and we do. We do look back. But we also look at our life now, and we say, these are some of the best years of our life. And so sometimes it's more than that. Sometimes it's more than just the original, than just the happenings. But I realize that things are different for different people. But enjoy the times that you are in right now and that'll prepare you for the times to come. In school, we talk about a number of different things. We talk about, we can think about the pupil, we can think about the teacher, we can think about the parents, we can think about the board, and we want to do a little bit of all of that. But let's think about the pupil. One of the things that was so exciting for me in going to this reunion this summer was it wasn't the curriculum that we studied. It wasn't even the teachers that we had, although that was important. But it was the relationships that we had that I would have had with the other classmates. That was the big thing after 50 years. I think it's important in school, but it really becomes important later in life. And so, so memories, the ordinary things that you do, the routines that you have, can become a ground for some really terrific memories later, if there's no regrets. One of the things that we started when we got together at our meeting, one of the classmates from years ago, he was just a grade ahead of me, he said, let's begin by singing "Unto Thee, O Lord." And the second verse is, "Remember not the sins of my youth." A lot of nervous laughter right after that one, because all of us had memories that we didn't want to necessarily share. But yeah, that was a part of it there. He said it kind of tongue-in-cheek, but we all knew what he meant. And we had, yeah, there were things that were good to remember. There were things that were not so good. But just the normal things of life there were so important. I mean, were so important after 50 years. The little rooms, the little bathrooms that we had, that we had 57 students for two teachers. Grades 1 to 4 was in one room. Grades 4 to 8, 5 to 8 was in the other room. So you teachers that think you're overworked today, this is what we went to. And, of course, we taught much the same when my wife and I were teaching. So she taught grades 1 to 4 and I taught 5 to 8. So I know you get a lot, you have time to do a lot more with your students than what we did. But I was teaching a group of parents that said that they all went to one-room school. Teacher had no discipline problems. And so the teacher was supposed to keep everything in order. And we tried, but, you know, it wasn't always that way. But what are the most important things for the pupil to learn? You know, the Sunday school children said one of the important things this morning to learn obedience. That's terribly important. Learn respect. And that needs to be, that needs to go from little on up. One of the things that our school does is has a title of respect for the teachers, which is important. So you address the teacher not as "hey" or "you" or "teacher," but "Miss Benita" if you want to, or "Miss Andrea" or "Schrock" or whatever you want to, whatever the teacher chooses. But the title of respect is important. This year, Bryant, our grandson, is starting his first year, and his mother was instructing him to remember to address the teacher as his aunt is teaching. So there's familiarity there. And she said, "Remember to call Miss Judy, Miss Judy." And Bryant says, "Well, shall I call Dad, Brother Dad?" So he was taking it a step further there. So there is this little bits of complications that come in there. But teaching respect is one of those things. And that's just one part of it. We need to learn gratefulness as a student. I told you the story about how that we had a hard time learning, had a hard time thinking about being privileged. I was probably because I was not grateful. And the men were trying to teach us gratefulness. Well, that's something that needs to be learned. Doesn't happen naturally, but it's something that needs to be learned. And to learn how to be gracious, extending grace to other people. One of my schoolmates was a teacher later in life, but in school, he was a big, strong farm boy. And he would keep order on the playground when nobody else was there. And I remember him taking two children that were fighting, two boys, and he'd take them and he'd just bang their heads together a little bit. One time there was not another student that was close by so he could bang heads together, so he took him and banged his head against the concrete wall for a little bit. That was how he kept order. He learned graciousness much later in life, but that was our experience in school. There wasn't too many people that crossed him. And he was a nice guy, actually, believe it or not. But that was one thing that he used. He used force to improve behavior. And it was times when behavior was needing to be improved. If people were fighting or something like that, and he would teach them not to by banging their heads together. And so it's not really a good thing to do, but that sometimes when students are left to their own devices, those things happen. Let's talk about teachers a little bit. A teacher needs to recognize that parents, and you know, I think that in many ways I am teaching. They have a saying, preaching to the choir. Joseph used that recently. I've heard it other times there, but you know, it's when you're teaching something to a group of people that really know a lot more than what are well established in this, you know, it's a little bit more limited in what we can say, but I'm going to say it anyhow. Recognize parents as being a part of the team on academics and being a part of the learning process. You do that, I'm sure. But a parent gives the teacher the challenge and the responsibility of guarding the children's lives for a long time each day. And the teacher sometimes, it can feel like I'm got this sole responsibility, but he doesn't. He or she has a parent's help in that as well. The teacher is such an important link. The teacher is the human link, is the physical link, is the person between the curriculum and the parent, between the curriculum and the student, between the student and the curriculum and the board. There's just the teacher is just right there. The teacher is the single most important thing that we can do for our school. The teacher curriculum is important. Some, you know, we've this past year faced it's made it a big issue, and it is a big issue. But the teacher is a bigger issue. The teacher is the single best thing we can have for our school. And I'm glad to have good teachers there. So you have my full support and blessing, because it's the most important thing that you can have for school. A teacher needs to be a student in the sense that they continually learn and continually broaden their horizon into other things. I'm impressed with the Apostle Paul and his learning. He counts this all but dung that he may win Christ. And you know, sometimes I've read that for years, and thinking that he's saying this is worthless. He's not saying it's worthless. He's saying it's dung that he may win Christ. What is dung? You know, you chicken farmers and turkey farmers know the value of that. It makes things grow. It is good. It's not something you want to wave around. It's not even something that people appreciate when they are in the proximity of it. But it is something that makes it grow and does good in the right place. And that's the exact example that we see of Paul this morning on Mars Hill. He has taken his knowledge that he had of, and he is preaching the unknown God to these idolatrous people, these people that had so many gods, and he is taking what he knows and he's hooking it on something that they already know, and he's making it stick with the gospel of salvation. Something that they didn't know, but he was fully familiar with the gods of the Greeks and the Romans and so on, and he could relate in a very effective way because he knew that. And that's what I'd like to see. That makes an effective teacher. When you can take your broad knowledge and you can hook it on your students and on something that they don't know, something you know that you can teach them. It's really, really difficult to teach on the same level that you already know. I mean, just not beyond that. It's really difficult. For me, it would be very difficult to teach on the same level of things that I know and try to teach that. I had an eighth grade education, so eighth graders were tough. But it can be done because of extra study and so on. So teachers are an effective force. They need to continue to learn, and a lifetime of learning is a tremendous blessing. We look at our subjects of math, language, science, history, literature as tools that the more we learn, the more that these are tools that God gives us that are, they have, some of them are absolute, some of them are broadening, but they can be tools that we can give us more understanding and help the students to realize that using these tools will be of service for them in whatever ways the Lord leads them. You know, math. All of us use math one way or another. Some of us like it and some of us don't. But we all use it. But, you know, symbols and so on can change, but the basic principles do not change. That is unchanging. Multiplying is multiplication. Multiplying is just it will always be that way. We used to always use the X. Now they use the asterisk for a symbol. Those things change, but the power of it does not change. I remember in Bible school, one of the teachers told us that you take a checkerboard, and it has how many squares on a checkerboard? Who knows? 64 squares. You take 4 grains of wheat and you put it on one square, and you multiply that times itself, and you put it on the next square. So you put 4 on the first square, and you put 16 on the next square, and you put 16 times 16 on the next square, and of course you run out of space pretty soon. But he said, how much wheat would it be until you got to the end of the checkerboard? And he had us make some ideas. Well, nobody knew the answer, and nobody knows the answer. Because why? There has never been that much wheat raised in the history of the world up till now. You know, the power of multiplication. It's really, really tremendous. If you take those numbers and multiply it times itself, you soon have numbers that are way beyond calculation. And that was hard to understand. That was a little bit hard to grasp because a checkerboard, we can see all those squares. Surely that couldn't be right. Yet, try it out. It is right. It can't happen. Language. We think of language as something that is a constant, but language changes. Today, I mentioned a number of times that men told us that we were privileged in school. Today, if you say something is privileged, what are you thinking about? What is it? How is it used to today? Is it good or is it bad? If somebody says, I come from a privileged background, or if somebody is saying, he's come from a privileged background, it's actually pretty negative, because that means that person had so much money he didn't have to work for it. It means that he probably doesn't take responsibility for his own actions. It probably means that he is just pretty spoiled. But the word is privileged. And that's the way it's used many times today. So language changes. Science. Science was it was a weak spot, but there's a lot of interesting things that a person can do to make science more interesting, and some of you teachers have discovered those. There's a book of experiments that have at home that is really, really interesting, of things that you can do. But I'm thinking about mothers and cooking. What does baking powder do? I'd really like to know. I don't know. But what does baking powder, it leaves a tremendous void if you leave something out. Yet what does it actually do? Teach your daughters what baking powder actually does. History. History is something that's extremely fascinating to me because it's what happened. And I'd much rather read history than read novels or just stories, unless they're extremely well written. But history but it's also a perception of what people, how they view it. And so there's a caution there. It's not just bare facts, but it's a perception. And something we can use. Literature, another great tool to see how the understanding is. So parents, when our teachers are giving these lessons, and we were weak in that, we need to be understanding with our students, but not to excuse them. I was bad in math, so yeah, you'll have a struggle with it. It'll probably never work. I don't see why we need to learn all these parts of speech, language. You don't need to do that to be a farmer. Those are bad attitudes, and they need to be purged from our... These tools are necessary and good. Excel. The more you have to God's use, he can use them and for his glory. Books, good books, are an investment. One of the books that I would recommend that has come out since I was in school, and that is that book of Indian history, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. That gives us a story from the American perspective, looking at the white man coming west. And it's a tremendous story. It's a tremendous read, and something that we need to. It's good for us, at least on the men's side, to look at it. There, it's a very, very sad story, very gruesome sometimes, but it's something that we older ones didn't read in history in school. One of the things that we have here often is encouraging more than one language, and that's great. Some of us are unfortunately just stuck with one language, and it's a little bit it's kind of handicapping us a little bit and what we can learn about other things. But anyhow, encourage more than one language. So if you've got Spanish, Dutch, Romanian, that's great to learn more than one on that. Nowadays, there's some special meetings for the school board that we can take advantage of, and our board has. And they came back, the board members came back ready to teach school, they said. They were so inspired and given a vision for the school that it was great. The Bible says, Paul says in 2 Timothy 2:2, he says, "And the things which thou hast heard of me, the same commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also." So Paul was using faithfulness or as a requirement. And he was also telling them to teach, he was also telling them that they should commit the teaching to faithful men that can be an influence like that to other people. And he was using himself as an example there. So I believe that that's a good role to follow. One of the great things that we have in our school, and that is people that have been here a long time and our policies, we have a constitution. Those are things that make so that we don't have to make a decision on every single thing every single time. It helps to keep things going in a good line. But we need to keep our vision for the school as preparing students to face the world in a godly way. And this, I think, is the success of the school. 1 Peter 3:15, where it says, "Sanctify the Lord God in your heart, and be ready always to give an answer to every man that asketh you a reason of the hope that is in you with meekness and fear." I believe that as we appreciate our heritage, as we appreciate the culture that we're growing up in, I believe that it's going to if we see that as a blessing, we can pass that on. But the most important thing that we can see is that our lives are rooted in the Word of God. And the way that they're rooted there is by establishing as important the things that God holds important. He holds His Word important. And, you know, Paul was preaching to the Athenians. He was preaching to them the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. And some of them believed. Others said, "That it's impossible. How can you prove the resurrection to someone that doesn't want to believe?" The way it's done is if there is through the lives of changed men. And Paul was one of those men whose life was changed by seeing the risen Christ. And so when Christ is real in our life, it becomes a success. But up to that point, people can be rich materially. They can be destitute. That's neither a measure of their success or failure. But when they have Christ, when Christ is not in their life, that's the measure of failure there, no matter how much money they have. Because material things, which most things which is the measure for many, many people, simply makes a bigger pile of ashes at the end of life. And so not having anything is not not successful either. But having Christ is a measure of success. Sanctify the Lord God in your heart. Be ready also, always, to give an answer to every man the reason of the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. One of the things that we can help, both as parents, as teachers, as others in the home, we can help our students understand the importance that all these subjects are in other areas of life, how it helps to have a good attitude and learning that. And one more thing, from a teacher's perspective, a teacher doesn't want the parents to get all their information from the student. If there is a strange happening in school, talk to the parents. Talk to the teacher and see if the student's take on it is accurate. As adults, we wouldn't want to get all of our information to make a judgment from an 8-year-old or 9-year-old or 10-year-old or 11-year-old or 12-year-old, simply because things look different back then than they do here. All of us have a sense of fairness, and we can experience when something is when something isn't fair, but not all of us can make judgment from both sides. And that's what the youngsters lack, is that they can't see it from another person's perspective. A teacher was a student. A parent may have been a teacher and a student. A school board member may have been all three of those. And so, a student has never been a parent, usually. And so they can only see things from one point of view. It's a huge subject, and there's many things that can be shared. But the thing that I feel is the most important is that we find our place, that we continue to fill our place as God's people in promoting His word and His name in school and in church, in our home life, and in all. Most of us had, in my generation, most of us would have had Christian teachers, but not Christian curriculum. Our thinking may have been turned a little bit. But I still say that the Christian teacher is by far the most important fixture in the school, and the curriculum is secondary, because the teacher can override that. It is great to have good Christian curriculum, not diminishing that, but it is the teacher is really the important part. And then as we increase our learning, books are incredibly important as a library in school. We had a focus on that years ago about having a good school library. I'd like to say that continues to be important, and the home library as well. Somebody has said, and I repeat, that your home library value should be the same as your family car. Now look at your books out there, and somebody said, I would never sell my books for that. And somebody says, wow. So I don't know what you're driving today, but if your books should be, I think that's a fairly good indicator. Not everybody can afford a lot of books. They can't afford to drive a fancy car either, if that's the case. But good books, loving to read, increases your perspective, makes you more like the Apostle Paul, better fitted to be able to hook something on somebody when you know something about what you're talking about. And that was him. Peter complained a little bit about Paul and said, some of his writings are so hard to understand. But Paul was the example of Christianity that we can look to today. He was a man that was changed when he met Christ. And he was a man that continues to change people today. And he used his what he knew for the good. All right, let's come before the Lord in prayer.